One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Hey, I'm Steph.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Today.
And we're live.
Hello.
How are you?
Fantastic. How are you?
I am great.
Good.
And we have a story.
We do, as we always do. Today, it's about Murder for Hire.
Okay.
Thoughts on Murder for Hire?
Who is for hire? Who is doing the murders for hire?
Hit
I don't get
men?
It. Where do you find these people?
I think that's the biggest hurdle to jump, no? To find them?
Right.
You'd have to be involved with some really shady characters to, like, know a hitman.
Yeah, like, I just don't believe that it exists.
Well, don't
really
say that.
At all.
Because I feel like someone will be like, really? You don't?
Really?
Bet.
I mean, like, bet. Yeah, sure. I mean, maybe. Like, it's got to be a real small amount. Like, this does feel like a thing that would be cracked down on pretty hard, pretty quickly.
Well, what I will say is that I know that there are people who pose as hitmen and they're undercover cops, which is exactly what happens in this story and most of the murder for hire stories that we have and know of, because how else are you going to catch them?
I feel like any person who's like, yeah, I'm for hire to murder and like we'll do it for a complete stranger is a fed.
That's a good assumption to make, but some people are not. And I guess people who are looking for murder for hire are like, let me just consult the shadiest person I know and just hope that they're not going to squeal on me.
Yeah, it's like, you're dumb. I don't get it, but...
Yeah, that is precisely the issue that our person looking to hire for murder was dealing with in this story. So why don't we just jump in and start talking about it?
Yeah, I want to know what the situation was.
Okay, great. In June of 2016, Detective Randy Lamb of the Johnson County Sheriff's Office in North Liberty, Iowa, got an unexpected call that something bad was about to happen. When Ron Roby was the one calling it in, they knew that there was probably more to this story, and it wasn't going to be as it appeared. Ron Roby was known by the Johnson County Sheriff's Office because he had a long rap sheet of his own, so he was like kind of a known criminal in the area.
A known hooligan, if you will.
Sure. Ron himself has said that his life was full of crime, however, he's never been violent. He's always been a white-collar criminal. With Ron Roby's long list of financial crimes and scams, the police didn't find him to be particularly trustworthy. He's someone who is known among the Johnson County Sheriff's Office as a con man. So on Monday, June 13th at 10:30 a.m., Ron Roby came into the Johnson County Sheriff's Office for an interview. He told police he knew this man named Justin DeWitt, and Justin would have considered Ron to be a very close friend of his. Ron had initially met Justin when he and his wife Sherilyn were looking for a landscaper, and instead of just becoming Ron's landscaper, he would hang out and have coffee, and it was clear to Ron that Justin was trying to become friends with him. Ron learned that Justin didn't have any male friends, apparently. When Justin believed that they were close enough friends, he approached Ron and asked him if he would be interested in doing Justin a favor. Ron asked him what kind of favor he needed, and Justin told Ron that he wanted Ron to kill a man and his family for him.
Okay, if this is a fed, this is entrapment.
Justin?
Yeah, is Justin a fed?
No, Justin is not a fed.
Okay.
But it seems like Justin is befriending Ron because he knows he's kind of a shady character and is hoping that he'll know of something or he'll do it himself.
Okay, wow. Justin, what's going on here?
And Ron said that he knew Justin was serious, and he had a decision to make in that moment, because Ron knew if he didn't play along, Justin would try to find someone else to do him that favor. And Ron also knew that if he went to the police right then and there with that information, they weren't potentially going to believe him because of his track record. So he needed to get some real tangible proof. So before he even went to the cops, he's like, I gotta get me some proof. So after their initial conversation, Ron approached Justin once again, but this time he had his phone recording. Police initially suspected that Ron had an ulterior motive. Their first thought was that Ron was in trouble with the law and maybe he was using this quote-unquote proof to get a deal. But that was before he played the recording of the conversation he had with Justin DeWitt. Ron asked Justin what came up that made him want to kill this man and his family. And Justin told him that this man was responsible for Justin losing one of his best customers. This customer would pay him $75,000 to $80,000 a year, and he had serviced them for 6 years because Justin was a landscaper. And so there was a big contract that he lost because of this man, is what he's claiming. So this entire murder for hire plot was based off of a lawn mowing contract.
Wow. Dude, go find another lawn.
So Justin asked Ron how much he thought that this hit would cost. And Ron told him about $8,000 if they included the kids, which is what Justin wanted to do.
Whoa, dude.
Yeah, because Justin's saying, I want to kill this man, his wife, and his kids.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
How old are the kids?
Not old. I believe they were like 2 and 4 or something, like small kids.
Whoa, over a lawn contract.
Correct.
If you have a client that's $80,000 a year, your business is probably fine. Like, I bet you hurt, but barely, like, losing that client actually doesn't affect your life.
Yeah, like, that was a big client for him, but also he must have other clients.
Right.
You know, and you can
You wouldn't be able to land that client.
Yeah, also, like, was it such a bad thing that happened that you couldn't repair the relationship with that client?
Yeah.
Like, do something.
Well, the whole point of me saying that is that not only is he going to murder children.
Right.
He's doing it over a contract that doesn't really affect his life.
That we know of, but yeah, pretty much.
I mean, you can be mad about it. I'm sure it affected him that way, but...
Right. I mean, $80,000 isn't nothing. Like, that's quite a bit of money.
I'm saying, once you get to that level, you're probably making at least 6 figures a year.
Sure.
You own your own business, and at a certain point, like, the more money you make, like, yeah, great, you can buy a boat, but... It's not like you're going into desperation over it. I don't know. You're really killing people over... You're killing children over essentially nothing.
I feel the same way. I'm like, okay, yeah, $80,000's a lot of money, but also it's children and a man and his wife. Like, that's crazy. You shouldn't be taking a life over that amount of money, or any amount for that matter. But when the police heard that Justin wanted to include the kids in this, they were, of course, furious. They knew Justin DeWitt was pure evil at that point because he had no problem including this man's wife and kids in this hit. Ron told Justin in the recorded phone call that he had to give over some kind of collateral and would need to come up with $8,000 by the end of the month. Not Today is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's getting dark so early now and the cold is definitely here, but one of my favorite things to do is to curl up under a massive blanket and enjoy the colorful Christmas lights. How do you stay cozy during these winter months? For some, wrapping up in a blanket with hot chocolate or watching a movie with the family is the best way to spend the month of December. Therapy is a great way to bring yourself some comfort that never goes away, even when the season changes. For me, it's essential during these dark winter months to take care of my mental health. I've definitely benefited from therapy. It's extremely helpful for learning positive coping skills, it empowers you to be the best version of yourself, and how to set boundaries. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find comfort this December with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/nottoday to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/nottoday. So the man that Justin wanted to put this hit out on was named Chad Williams. And he was, I believe, some kind of business partner with the landscaping company. I don't know exactly how that worked out. I saw things that was like, oh, he sold the company to Chad, or but he still continued to have like a certain percentage stake in the business. So like him losing that amount of money was bad for him. Either way, they were somewhat business partners.
Okay.
The police decided initially not to tell Chad and his family about this threat because they were worried that Chad might confront Justin or possibly leave suddenly, and that could really complicate their investigation. And I do understand them doing that, but also I'm like, dude, if I had a hit on me and my family, I'd want to know.
Yeah, me too.
You know?
Or just have, at least have them put like a squad car outside your house or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, but also like they're trying not to draw unnecessary attention because the whole operation hinges on Justin thinking he's actually talking to a real hitman. So, and nothing can be out of the ordinary, you know?
Yeah.
Chad and Angie Williams had been married for 9 years and had two young kids, a girl and a boy. And like I said, at the time, they would have been around 4 and 2 years old. The Williams family owned this landscaping company, which Chad had bought from Justin DeWitt, but Justin retained a 5% ownership stake. So Justin was never really in the shop, and the two rarely saw each other, but he did still have an office there. So when they did see each other, they had very casual interactions, like just good morning, how are you kind of thing. But that interaction wasn't very frequent. The only time Angie had ever met Justin was after he came to their house once, and at the time, Angie had been 8 months pregnant with her daughter. So this is like a very casual interaction kind of guy, and they have no idea that he is so livid with them to the point where he wants to put out a hit on their entire family.
Whoa. So, like, what happened with the sale of the company? I'm just confused. Does he currently run a landscaping business or not?
It's kind of unclear. It's seeming like he sold it to Chad, but he doesn't like how Chad is running it. And since he still has 5%, like that $80,000 a year loss for the company is like pretty big for him.
Okay. So he gets 5% of that.
I guess. Yeah.
Okay. So it's not even over 80 grand. That's insane.
I'm just piecing together.
It's like over $4,000 a year.
Yeah. I'm just piecing together what I've gathered. I don't really exactly know the company part of it, but point being, these were like kind of business partners who didn't really see each other very often.
Okay.
Sergeant Reuben Ross told Ron Roby to let Justin know that he had a few different guys' numbers who could help him out with this favor he was asking of Ron. So Sergeant Ross gave Ron his cell number in case anything happened, Ron could let him know directly. So Ron's wife, Sherilyn, was very proud of Ron for going to the police in the first place because she knew how hard it would have been for him to go to the cops with something given his history and past interactions with the police. And it was because of that rap sheet that the police didn't fully trust Ron, even with the evidence he initially brought them. One of their main concerns was that Ron was part of this somehow, or Justin felt like he had to commit this crime and that Ron was somehow steering him toward that conclusion. That was pretty frustrating for Ron because he had come in with a recorded conversation and in no part of it was he manipulating or steering that conversation. He was just gathering information. But what they decided they were going to do was have Ron Roby make a recorded phone call to Justin DeWitt with police instruction. That way they would have it as part of their investigation and not just like random evidence that Ron is rolling up with. If Ron was successful in that, it would solidify for the police that Justin was the driving factor in this case. So June 22nd, 2016, Ron was sitting in a room with a police officer when he made the call to Justin. When Ron got him on the phone, he asked Justin if he was in the same state of mind and what he wanted Ron to do, but Justin didn't respond. Ron asked him if he was freaked out or something and didn't want to say anything over the phone, and Justin told him yes. So Ron said, "All right, buddy, talk to you soon," and hung up. He wanted to set up an in-person conversation with Ron since he was paranoid of talking over the phone. And that wasn't the most ideal for the police because given Ron's past, they wanted to minimize his involvement with this as much as possible. Also, they wanted to introduce their undercover officer as quickly as possible. They didn't want Ron influencing their investigation in any way. So when he left that day, he was told not to take any phone calls from Justin without talking to Sergeant Reuben Ross first. Later that day, Sergeant Ross saw that he had a voicemail on his phone from Ron. Ron had left him a message saying that he had been outside taking his garbage out when Justin had driven up and told Ron he wanted to have lunch with him. So Ron said there was no way he could get out of this lunch, but he wasn't sure what to do because the police had told him not to have any more contact. Sergeant Ross immediately called Ron back to tell him to put off any meeting with Justin as long as he possibly could. Wednesday, June 22nd, 2016, at around 1:05 p.m., Sergeant Ross called Ron once again, and Ron told him that Justin was at his house. Sergeant Ross asked if he knew how to set up the voice recorder on his phone, and Ron told him that he didn't. But then he switched up his voice a little bit and said, "Can I get back to you?" And Sergeant Ross said, "Yeah, you bet. We'll see you, bud." Because they had to kind of pretend like they weren't talking to the police.
Right.
According to the police, Ron was either unable or unwilling to do this recording, and they weren't sure which was something they were very worried about. It was problematic that they didn't have any recording of how that conversation went. Everyone working on that case was worried that Ron may be strong-arming Justin. So at that point, they decided their best move was to go to Ron's house. This was at a different time when Justin was not there, but they instructed him to make another phone call to introduce the undercover cop to Justin as the hitman. And Ron was fine with this, and they were able to record this conversation. So Ron called Justin and told him he had talked to his guy and he was going to call Justin, meaning the hitman. It was going to be a number he didn't recognize, but he would need to pick it up. And based off of what Ron had shared with them about the conversation he had had with Justin that wasn't recorded, they knew that Justin was serious about his plans and they needed to work very quickly. So they decided to partner with the Department of Public Safety for logistical support and because they have good undercover officers. Special Agent Doug Hurley was chosen to be their undercover officer. He was good at being undercover. He looked the part of a typical hitman type, and he had worked a lot of narcotics cases. And he was very excited about the idea of getting to be involved with a murder-for-hire case. He said that kind of thing is like a bucket list item for a narcotics agent, because he would be stopping the most evil person from doing something terrible. So Doug really didn't want to mess this up.
Right. It's just funny to describe it as a bucket list item.
Yeah, but I mean, if you think about it, like...
Yeah, no.
For an undercover officer, it's the cool stuff.
I guess so.
So when Doug was ready, he relaxed, turned on his recorder, and then made his phone call to Justin. It was Thursday, June 23rd at 1:37 p.m. He said, "Hey, Justin, it's Doug. You need some stuff taken care of?" And Justin said, "Yeah." And Doug said, "Can you meet tomorrow at 1 o'clock? Justin said, "Yeah, I can probably do that." They agreed Justin would bring some type of collateral since he wasn't sure he could get the cash by tomorrow. And when Doug got off the phone with Justin, he sent him a text asking, "Where are we supposed to meet?" Justin chose the Menards parking lot off of Highway 218, which is basically like a Home Depot or Lowe's.
Save big money at Menards. Get your hit, man.
Exactly. Okay. For this meet, there would be a lot of other vehicles with officers in them around for safety and surveillance. Doug would be in a pickup truck, and he sat there and waited for Justin to arrive.
It's like 16 white vans.
They're all flower vans. Nothing weird to see here.
Don't worry about it.
Just a dog grooming van and a flower truck.
And a Scooby-Doo van.
Yeah, exactly. Going into it, Doug said he was very nervous. He didn't know what Justin was going to be like, and this was obviously very high stakes. So when Justin arrived, he opened the passenger door of the pickup truck with a smile and started cracking jokes with Doug, like immediately. They shook hands, and from that moment, Doug said he felt very at ease. Don't you love it when the evil guy makes you feel at ease?
It's even more eerie.
I know, it's extremely eerie, and it was very unsettling for Doug as well, but, you know, it kind of broke the tension a little bit. Justin had made some comment about how Doug doesn't know how to give directions, and he was like cracking a joke about how this is straight south, not southeast or some, I don't know. He was making some comment. But that broke the tension, and now he was able to continue on with this hitman conversation. So he told Justin to jump into the truck so they could start talking. And the entire time, there was a camera hidden somewhere in the dashboard that was pointed directly at Justin. So this entire thing is very much recorded. The fact that he got into the car was already a big win for the cops because that showed intent. But now Doug needed him to talk about it. He asked Justin if he had the cash, and he said he had to run and get it later on. And Doug also said he would need a picture of Chad. Justin told Doug he didn't have a picture, but if they went to his shop, he'd have one since there's a picture of Chad and his wife in Chad's office. Doug told Justin he could just take a picture of that picture and text it to him. Doug also tried to get him to talk as much as he could, so he asked him what Justin has to gain from this hit. And Justin told him that Chad had cost him a lot of money. He had the contract with a good customer for a long time, and then Chad messed it all up. And because of that, he lost the account. Justin told Doug Chad's name. Chad's wife's name was Angie, and they had two kids, but he wasn't sure what their names were. Justin told Doug he wanted it done by the end of the month. And Doug said, "You want the kids dead too?" And Justin responded, "You might as well do them all. Is there any point in killing him and her and not them?" He said it as casually as if he were talking about the weather.
Whoa.
Yeah. He's like, "Yeah, I guess. Kill them all. Who cares?"
How does a person do that? Psychopathy. But, you know, I just don't get it.
No. Yeah, I could never understand that. Doug's stomach immediately turned because he knew Justin didn't care at all about what he was saying and was extremely cold, which is a jarring thing to witness. Doug said, "So you don't care if I walk up, shoot him in the face, and then do the same to her and the kids?" And Justin said, no, he didn't care how Doug did it. He just wanted them dead. Doug told Justin it would cost him $8,000 to take out four people. And at the end of the conversation, Doug told him to go back to his office, get their address, and send him the picture of Chad and his wife. He then told Justin that within 24 hours of him bringing the money, it would be done. So he said, "They're going to be dead and they're not coming back. Do you understand that?" And Justin's response was, quote, "I've never met anyone that was dead and then came back." And then he chuckled. So it was clear Justin was going to stop at nothing to get this family killed, and he was happy about having it done. At that point, Doug had everything but the money, which they wanted him to hand over because that would kind of be the nail in the coffin for Justin. Not 20 minutes after leaving Doug's truck, Justin sent over the picture of Chad and Angie, and it was a wedding photo. Like, it's just such a wholesome...
Whoa.
Yeah. He has their wedding photo sitting on his desk, and this man sent a picture of it to a supposed hitman.
Why does he have their wedding photo sitting on his desk, but also... What the fuck?
No, it was on Chad's desk.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. After sending the photo, Justin didn't text for the rest of the weekend. Their plan was for Justin to give him the money on Monday, so when he didn't text at all, they became worried that he was backing out. When he finally did text on Sunday night, he told Doug he wasn't sure that he'd be able to come up with the $8,000. This was really concerning because it could have meant, "I can't come up with the money, so I'm out," or it could have been that he found someone to do it for a lot cheaper than $8,000 and they weren't sure which it was.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Justin told Doug he thought he could get $1,000 together. He also said, "My word is my bond. My father raised me that way." And then he texted that he could put it in writing if that's what Doug needed. So he's basically like, "I can't get the $8,000, but I can put in writing that I owe you $7,000.
Yeah. He's like, "Yeah, you know what? Do it."
Yeah. So that was a huge relief because he hadn't found someone else. And also, the idiot said he'd put it in writing, like, which was a ridiculous thing to put in writing, but it wasn't going to be like, I'm paying you $7,000 to kill these people. It was going to be just an IOU contract. But that was a piece of evidence that would obviously show intent because he was fully planning on giving Doug the $8,000 to kill the family. He just couldn't do it that minute. And his name would be signed at the bottom of this contract. So Monday, June 27th rolls around and Doug and Justin return to the Menards parking lot to meet up once again. Doug started their meeting with a pleasantry and a fist bump. And then he told Justin that he was going to start by killing the kids first and then he was going to bring out Angie. He'd kill her with Chad in front of him and then Chad would see all three of them dead. And as soon as Doug said that, Justin smiled really big because he enjoyed that idea. And this is all on video. Like, I watched this conversation happen.
Wow, this is so sadistic, but this has to be the most open and shut case we've talked about.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. Then Justin told Doug that it was up to him if he wanted to kill the kids. He said, quote, "If you're going to do it all for eight, then sure." He didn't have a sudden change of heart. He just wanted to make sure it wouldn't cost him more than $8,000 to kill the kids, too. Doug then said, "I can kill them all if you want me to kill them all." And Justin again said, "It's up to you. If it's going to cost me more than eight, then..." And he kind of trailed off. And Doug said, "It's going to cost you $8,000 because that's what you told me you'd pay. I can kill two or I can kill all four." And Justin said, "Well, then do all four."
What, like it's a la carte?
He's like, "Well, you're going to pay $8,000 regardless, so two or four." And he's like, "Do all four of them. Fuck it."
What, Jesus Christ, it's like two for one?
Pretty much.
Murders?
Yeah.
Of children?
Right.
Disgusting.
Exactly. Then Justin handed Doug over the $1,000, and Doug was like, "Okay, now let's do the IOU. And Justin laughed because he's like, "What do you even want this thing to say? I just wanted you to feel better about this, so I said I'd put it in writing." And then Doug was like, "Well, I don't want to kill all of them for you for $1,000 and then have you run off." And so Justin was like, "All right, fair enough." And he starts writing up this IOU contract. And as he's doing that, he said, "You don't have the cops here waiting for me, do you?" And Doug said, no. And he said, "Okay, good." Meanwhile, all of the cops are in different trucks around the Menards parking lot.
If you have to ask the question.
Right. Special Agent Yagat Sandhu, who was in a nearby car listening to everything with his partner, kind of laughed because that was a funny thing to say. But also it kind of made them nervous at the same time because they're like, "Oh my God, is he catching on that this is fully a sting?" Like,
yeah.
But no, he didn't.
Like, I'm glad that this was so easy.
Yeah.
But just like everything that they're doing is like, oh, intent, showing intent, putting it in writing.
Mm-hmm.
Texting, phone calls.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, it's wild that he's not realizing that this is what's happening.
Right. And they're like, "You sure you want to kill them and the kids?
What about the kids?" Yeah. No, I think he's asked him like multiple times about the kids now.
Yeah. They're basically spelling it out for him. They're like, "These people are going to be dead and they're not coming back. Are you sure you want to do that?" And he's like, "Yeah, totally.
Yeah. This
kill
is why we're here.
Yeah. Obviously, I want to do that. Why are you asking me that?" So, anyway, Doug knew that once he handed over that signed contract, they were set. And the investigators had everything they needed. And this was all showing very clear intent. But Doug said, "They're going to be dead tonight and there's no turning back. You're good with that, right?" And Justin was like, "Contract signed, money in your pocket. Yeah, obviously I'm okay with it." Like, he's like,
why did he ask again? It's like,
because,
dude,
the more evidence you get against this man, like the more times he says, "Yes, I want to kill this innocent family and children," the easier it is for them to put him away.
Sure,
forever.
But I mean, how many times do you need it? Like, aren't you risking like him being like,
well, at this point, they're not risking anything because the cops are going to come arrest him like right now. Like, they're done with their interactions. So, yeah, that was the time that the arrest team knew it was their turn to come in and get Justin. Police approached the car and said, "Get out of the car, police." And then Doug pushed Justin out of the car. And then, since he was now in custody, Doug got out of the car and walked away, since he felt like he was going to throw up from the emotion of the whole thing. Doug then got himself together and grabbed Justin by the arm and pulled him up, since I guess he was either on the ground or hunched over. And Doug told him to stand next to him and look at the camera. And Justin said, "Why?" And Doug said, "I'm a hunter and you're my trophy shot."
Whoa.
Yeah. And he stood there next to Doug and basically took this picture as if he was like Doug's fish. Like,
what the fuck?
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I feel weird about that one, but
that was kind of an alpha move, but I don't know. I mean, I'm pro Doug, obviously. Like,
yeah, pro police on this one. It's just, you know, it is a weird
move.
Weird move.
Weird flex. Yeah, for sure. Doug then got back into his car, made a call to his wife, and told her that he was on his way home and the deal was done. Detective Randy Lamb of the Johnson County Sheriff's Office now had the task of going to Chad Williams' house and make him aware of everything that just went down, because Chad and Angie still have no idea that they had a hit out on them that the police have been working on for like weeks.
Yeah. I have a feeling they're not going to be too happy
about
what happened.
Yeah, so he told Chad and Angie that the two of them, along with their kids, were victims of a murder for hire. Detective Lamb had to repeat himself because they could not grasp what they were being told. And Angie said immediately she started shaking. She had no idea what to say, but the only thing she could do was grab her kids. Police were never really able to fully determine what the real cause of the animosity between Justin and Chad was. Justin was claiming that Chad had like done fertilizer wrong on this person's lawn and had like burnt the lawn. So he's like, because Chad burnt the lawn, I lost the contract, was his complaint. And like, that was why he was putting out this hit. But Chad said with 100% certainty that he and his company have never burnt a lawn. And even if he did, it would be about a $2,000 loss to replace that lawn. And so it's not a very big error anyway, even if he did scorch a lawn with too much fertilizer, but he didn't.
Okay.
So Chad had no idea why Justin wanted to kill him and his wife and kids, because his kids, one, had never met Justin. And also, Angie had only ever met him the one time. That was like very casual. And Chad barely saw him. And when they did see each other, it was like very casual whatever.
Did he lose the contract, though? Is that even true?
I honestly don't know. Maybe, but like, he was like, I never scorched a lawn. I never burnt a lawn with fertilizer.
Okay.
So the whole thing seemed completely crazy that this was happening, because to Chad, he's like, that didn't happen. I don't know why he wants me dead.
Yeah, the motive doesn't make any sense.
Right. So Justin DeWitt was charged with 4 counts of attempt to commit murder and 4 counts of solicitation to commit murder. And they made sure that Justin had a very high bond so that he could not get out. But as the case proceeded kind of slowly and they were just anxiously awaiting his trial, Doug Hurley got a call from another undercover agent who said they had received information that Justin was in Muscatine County Jail and was trying to hire someone to take out Doug next.
He just doesn't stop, does he?
So while he was awaiting trial, Justin DeWitt approached another inmate at the Muscatine County Jail wanting to solicit the murders of Ron Roby and Doug Hurley. So while he's in jail, he's like, actually, I'm going to put out a hit on Ron and Doug because they put me in here. He most likely assumed that if he got them killed, they wouldn't be able to testify against him and they wouldn't have a case against him. He was trying to like cheat the system, but that obviously wasn't going to work even if he was able to carry out that hit, because they had mountains of evidence against him and it was all recorded, like all of it.
Yeah.
Once police caught wind that he was trying to solicit another murder for hire from jail, they were very surprised, but it was clear that they were dealing with a very legitimate threat because he was in jail. So it was very possible that he could find other people in there that, one, don't like authority and don't like rules, and two, would be willing to commit murder for hire and like know the people who could do that. Doug wasn't shocked that Justin was doing this from jail. He had seen the evil in that man's eyes firsthand, and he also knew that this was a very irrational person. And so now Doug felt like he had gone from being the hunter to the hunted. There was a very big sense of urgency to this second case because he was surrounded by criminals. So Matt Allers was selected to be the new undercover agent. He had done other successful undercover jobs, so they knew that he could pull it off. And Matt wanted to help because Doug was his friend and was also someone that he looked up to. So it was personal for him. He wanted to make sure that whatever Justin DeWitt wanted to do to Doug never happened. Inside the jail, the police had an informant who told Justin he had a friend on the outside who would be willing to take care of this for him. And the informant referred to this person who he had on the outside who Justin would deal with as the Wolf. So Thursday, December 15th at 11:03 a.m., Matt Allers came to the Muscatine Jail as someone who worked for the Wolf to meet with Justin. He told Justin his name wasn't important, but he could call him Freddie Sandell. He told Justin that the phones they were talking on right now were the only safe place to talk in the prison, but the other phones that you would like make outgoing calls to people outside the jail were monitored at all times. So those phones were recorded and monitored, but the ones they were talking on right now were fine.
Yeah, believe that, dumbass.
Right. And they were also talking over like video call.
Wait, they're on a Zoom?
Yeah, so I think that Matt Ahlers was actually physically in the jail, but they weren't talking like face-to-face between glass like they were on FaceTime, kind of.
Okay.
Yeah. They told him that because they wanted to deter Justin from getting together a backup killing plan with someone on the outside. So they're like, don't use these phones, they're recorded. Matt let Justin know that if he had to contact him, he would have to be very discreet in what he said over those phones since they were monitored. And Justin told him he understood they could just use the word vacation as code for the hits. So when Matt mentioned these hits, he asked if he would only need the two men killed, meaning Ron and Doug. But Justin told him no, he would actually need three people killed, which was the first that anyone was hearing of that. Justin wanted Doug, Ron, and Ron's wife, Sherilyn, killed. Which was surprising.
Oh my God.
Because Sherilyn didn't do anything. But then again, neither did Angie or the kids. So.
Yeah. No, he just wants revenge.
Yeah. Justin showed Matt a picture he drew of the layout of Ron's house. When discussing price, Matt let Justin know that for killing three people, including Doug, who was a cop, it would cost him $25,000. Which he determined seemed like a fair price for a job like that. Matt told Justin the most difficult part of this would be killing Doug, since he was a state police officer. Matt explained that since he wanted Doug dead, that was why there was such a significant price tag, since he would have to do a lot of heavy lifting for that one. Justin told him that that was totally fine and he understood, but to send them on vacation soon because he had a big event on January 6th, which was his court date. And they wanted to speed this process along because, like I've already mentioned, he was surrounded by criminals, so even if he didn't feel like he could safely make calls out of the jail, he could have been able to find another connection potentially inside the jail. So Justin and Matt agreed that he would send a $500 check to a P.O. box to Freddie Sandell, or Matt Ahlers, for the down payment. Matt told him until they got that check and made sure the money was good, nothing was going to happen. But once they got something, they would be able to move forward. And after that was figured out, Ron Roby and Sherilyn, his wife, were approached by a few officers and told that there was a contract out for their hit from Justin, and they were stunned. But Ron said despite having a target on his back, the only thing he worried about was having a target on his wife's back. Officers did say it was kind of like ironic, I don't know if that's the right word, but that possibly the only time Ron did the right thing with the cops had resulted in a hit being put out on him.
Yeah, that is hilarious.
Like, it's kind of ironic. Yeah. So Doug's wife didn't know about the case and that there was now a hit out on her husband. And Doug wanted to keep it that way because he didn't want to scare her. He was needing to have these conversations behind closed doors so that both his wife and his kids couldn't hear what was going on. So now they needed to move forward with Justin and get the exchange of money going, but there was a problem, because the way Justin and Matt had been having their conversations was over video call, and an inmate had walked by Justin having one of these calls and had recognized Matt Ahlers. So he let Justin know that he was talking to a cop. At that point, the police felt like the gig was up. And that was really bad because now Doug, Ron, and Sherilyn's lives were in real danger. And as Matt Ahlers and the other officers were discussing this problem, Matt received a call from Justin to discuss the down payment, which meant that for whatever reason, Justin DeWitt did not believe this other inmate that he was talking to a cop.
Wow. Okay. This story really just gets wilder and wilder.
Yeah. Weird.
Yeah, I thought we were done after he was in jail.
Nope. Second hit. Doug found this amusing because Justin was now falling for this a second time, even though it was spelled out for him. And they were like, that's a cop. You're being played. And he was like, no, I don't think so. What are the odds it happens twice, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not just like surrounded by the police
right
in jail.
Well, that was a huge relief for everyone involved, so that was a win. But with that crisis out of the way, they started working to figure out their second meeting. They had to consider what Justin's defense attorney might try to argue, which could be that this is just idle, angry talk and he was simply venting. But it's a lot harder to make that argument when you have multiple meetings several days apart and they discuss what he wanted and what steps they would have to take to have it done. And then on top of that, there would be an exchange of money. But even if they didn't get the exchange of money, they needed that second meeting so that they could show him photos of the witnesses and have him physically say, yes, those are the people I want killed. So they staged a photo with Doug Hurley where they made it look like someone had like sneakily taken a photo of him in the grocery store. And Doug had actually had his son take this picture. They were at the grocery store together and he told his son to take this picture and his son was like, why? And Doug was like, trust me, once I tell you this story, you're going to think it's pretty cool.
Okay.
So his son took the staged photo that they showed to an inmate who put out a hit on his dad and was trying to get him killed.
What a life.
Yeah.
You know?
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Monday, December 19th at 11:12 a.m., Matt met with Justin to show him these photos. He showed him a picture of Ron, and Justin confirmed, then Sherilyn, and Justin once again confirmed, and then they showed the staged photo of Doug, and Justin confirmed once again. So Matt let him know that Mr. Wolf hadn't received any payment yet, and Justin said he was still working to get someone to answer his call and to get that check sent out, but he would have it done as early as that night. So Matt told him that once they got the down payment, they'd do the job. And after that second meeting, all they needed was the exchange of money. Justin called his brother to figure out this money since he had been selling things for his brother, but Justin didn't tell his brother what he actually needed the money for. And his brother was, like, unhelpful. So he called another friend, and he asked if he could send $250 to a person that he owed money to, and that friend said that they could. So Justin had them make it out to Fred Sandell, and that was all they needed. So at that point, it was time to bring in Justin for questioning, because now they had the exchange of money, even though it wasn't the agreed-upon $500, but still, it was money.
Wait, it was, how much was it?
They wanted a $500 down payment, but the entire thing was going to cost him $25,000. He ended up only paying $250 to this fake person.
Yeah, I guess the amount doesn't matter, but that's insane that he thought he could put a $500 down payment.
Right. I guess he just needed something, you know? Like
right.
They're like, here, just give us any money and we'll do it. And then you can just pay us the rest.
Yeah, which you clearly don't have.
Right. But now that they had the exchange of money, it was time to bring Justin in for questioning. December 27th, they brought him in. The officer in the room with Justin said they had heard that Justin may be attempting to hire another hitman. And Justin told him, no, man, I'm in here for that stupid shit. I wouldn't add to it. And then he was like, maybe they made it up. And when they asked him again, he was told he had to own up and fix this. And he said there's nothing to fix because he didn't do anything. They were like, okay, we can prove it. And yet again, he insisted, he doubled down that he had not done anything, so they couldn't prove something he didn't do.
Yeah, I mean, well, you're this far in.
Right.
You know.
And they were like, okay, well, those video visits are recorded. And he was like, the video visits? I thought it was just the phone. And they told him, no. And then he said, huh. And he kind of trailed off because that was when he knew.
And the other inmate told you it was a cop.
He was caught.
Dummy.
Yeah. Right. They said, we know you're a good guy. And Justin was like, mm-hmm. And they were like, maybe you were set up. And he was like, yeah, Ron called the cops on me. So he wouldn't really talk about the second round of hits that he tried to put out. He was just kind of talking in circles. And so they just left the conversation there. The following day, they brought him in again, and they started out the conversation with, "So you wanted those three people dead so they wouldn't testify against you?" And Justin was just like, "Yeah." Like, he knew he was caught and there was no reason to fight it. The officer asked Justin, "What do you think should happen to you?" And Justin said, "Nothing." The officer was like, "Okay, explain that one to me. What do you mean that nothing should happen to you?" And Justin told them that those two men, meaning Doug and Ron, were the reason he was in there. They did this to him.
I'm dumbfounded.
It's ridiculous.
At what's coming out of his mouth.
I know that he's able to like double down and then he's like, "Well, actually, it's their fault. They did this to me." It's like, well, no, you put out a hit on an innocent family. And so that's why you're in here, dummy.
Yeah, you also, like, 7 counts of attempted murder now.
Right.
I mean, yeah, I just, like, is there something wrong with him? I mean, yes. Obviously there's something wrong with him. But, like, what is going on with him that he's doing this? And then, like, his behavior makes absolutely no sense to me. And I just need to find a reason why.
I don't think we're going to find a reason why. He's a very weird man as it is. And I don't think he's suddenly going to start making sense to us. Like, he tried to put out a hit on a 2- and a 4-year-old. Like,
I
don't think there's any world in which we understand that, you know?
Yeah, for no discernible reason to anyone involved.
Exactly. The police then explained to him that they had enough on him to charge him with 3 counts of attempted murder for this second round of hits. But that would be a separate case. First up was his court case having to do with the hit he put out on Chad, Angie, and their kids. And he did enter a guilty plea for that. They had worked out a plea agreement between Justin DeWitt's attorney and Johnson County attorney. And so the term for the Johnson County cases would be up to 35 years, and it would be up to the parole board when he got out. So that was what he got for Chad and Angie and their kids. And when Chad and Angie heard about the outcome of this case, they were pretty happy with it. They felt like that would keep him where he should be for a very long time. And when it came to the second trial, the Muscatine County attorney believed that Justin was going to also plead guilty to the charges made against him for that one because they were equally as clear as the other ones. But after about halfway through the court proceedings for the case, he announced that he wanted to plead not guilty and wanted to go to trial. The Muscatine County attorney was worried that a jury would find Justin so weird and ridiculous that he couldn't have really meant that he wanted to kill these people. And so after the trial, the jury deliberated for 12 minutes and found him guilty. So
yeah,
they were not fooled by him.
Dude, just because you're weird doesn't absolve you of like the most clear-cut case ever.
Totally. But yeah, I mean, 12 minutes worth.
Yeah, they're like on a video call. They're like, "So you want us to kill these three people for $25,000?
Right. He's like, "Yes, I do."
Can you say that again?
I totally want you to kill those
three
people.
Can you bring the microphone closer?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Are you sure? Once they're dead, they will not be alive. And he's like, "For sure. Love that. That's my favorite thing."
Right. You understand the concept of death.
I totally do. I want them dead. So yeah, they deliberated for 12 minutes. And when they read the first guilty count for his attempted murder of John Douglas Hurley, he was staring at Doug and Doug stared at him right back the entire time they read that like outcome. So the two of them are just staring each other down. They're like, "Guilty for Doug, whatever." And I just can't imagine the tension in that stare, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, do you really want to be like poking the bear and staring him down? I mean, clearly he's trying to get hits out from jail. Like, well, you think he's just going to stop doing that?
Right. Doug was not scared of him and he was going away for what he had done. So he, you know, he's like, "I'm not going to look away. Screw that guy."
Yeah, I guess.
The court imposed a total of a 50-year prison sentence to be served consecutively to his Johnson County case. So altogether, he would serve a total of 85 years, which means he was never getting out of there. Prison security was much more intense with Justin because they knew that he wanted revenge and he was no stranger to putting out a hit. So they limited his access to computers, phones, and anything like that. So they were basically like, yeah, he's on hit watch.
Yeah, I mean, he's you have to monitor everything now.
Exactly. So like Doug didn't really have to be scared because he's like, okay, this man is under strict surveillance now, since they were well aware what he was capable of and what he wanted to do multiple times. And now they're very grateful to Ron because he went to the police and cooperated so much. And now they have a very dangerous person behind bars for life. So even though Ron had this like long record of like criminal history and he was kind of known to the cops as a con man and like not someone they wanted to deal with, They now were very grateful to him. Without Ron calling the police, this would have gone a much different way. They said with his history with police, it would have been very easy for him to leave it alone and not go to the cops, but he did, and his wife agreed that he did a really good job and she was very happy with his choice. Ron said at the time, quote, "I'm 67 years old and I've only done one thing right."
Fair enough.
So, yeah, hey, cool, Ron.
He's like looking at his wife.
Right.
He's like, "I've done one thing right."
Not, you're not marrying you.
And it ain't.
Just calling the cops. No, that's very funny. No, he loved his wife. It was very clear that he did.
Yeah.
But Tuesday, April 11th, 2023, Ron Roby was sentenced to 60 months in prison for being a felon in possession of firearms and ammunition. May 20th, 2021, Ronald Lee Roby entered a retail store in Coralville, browsed the firearm section, and selected two pistols to purchase. Roby paid for the pistols, but then told the sales associate he would come back later with his firearms permit and the other documents to complete this paperwork. And then on June 1st, he returned to the same store, convinced a different sales associate that he had already provided the necessary documentation when he paid for the pistols, and took possession of the firearms. He had multiple prior felony convictions and was prohibited from possessing firearms, which I feel like says a lot about the accessibility of guns in this country, that you can just convince someone that you already showed the paperwork that is necessary and he was able to get the guns. So anyway,
well, at least like it's not like the law is that you can just go get these.
Sure.
This is just, you know,
we should make it just a little
poor
bit harder.
Application. Yeah.
Just a little bit harder.
A little bit. Yeah. Maybe a computer system.
Maybe.
Check
right.
That out.
Yeah. We shouldn't just rely on the sales associate that you can very easily convince. Maybe let's have a record of that thing. Anyway, I digress. So yeah, he's in prison. So he continued to do some crime, but
Ron,
hey, he did
but
one
like,
thing,
that's
right?
That's such a stupid crime. Like,
well, we don't know what he was using it for.
I guess, but you know, like some people just, you know, want it for protection. Like it's not like he's,
I guess
he's not, he doesn't have a history of violence, you know?
That's true. He did say that at the beginning. He's like, yes, I've been a white collar criminal, but I'm not a violent person. So, I mean, I don't know. And he did the one thing right. So there's that. But you know, as far as updates go, he is serving a little bit of time.
Yeah. So Ron, you got to follow rules, dude.
Yeah, maybe. Justin Lee DeWitt, at the age of 39, I did not realize that he was not that old, was declared dead in February of 2020 at the Iowa Medical and Classification Center in Coralville, and he died of heart disease.
I was like, they need to do an autopsy on his brain and
or
study
something.
It.
Yeah. Well, he's now gone, and he died of heart disease. Doug.
Yeah, also, he had no redeeming quality.
No, he sucked. He had no problem putting out hits on multiple innocent people, including tiny children.
Yeah.
That man sucked. On a lighter note, Doug met Chad and Angie, and they were extremely grateful to him. Angie gave him the biggest hug because, as far as they're concerned, he saved their family, and he did. Doug said it does feel good to know that they're out enjoying their lives because of the work that they did. And that's kind of where I chose to leave us off, because that's all the information I have. That's the story of a crazy murder for hire that was completely senseless and seemingly had no motive the first time around. So I don't know. I was just like, what the hell?
Yeah. I wish they would have gotten I'm sure they tried to get it out of him, but yeah, it's just, it makes no sense. It's mind boggling. Also, in the beginning of the story, you went into the details of the murder for hire so quickly.
Yeah.
I was like, how is this going to be a full episode? Yet here we are.
Here we are. Full episode.
Like an hour later.
Because we have two murder for hires in one.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. You'd think he would have learned a little bit.
Yeah. Like, and did something happen to him?
I mean, there's obviously something wrong with this man. But,
right.
You
but
know,
like,
it's
I just, you just want something to have happened to him. You know, like.
Right. To explain
for
it.
For have no reason whatsoever.
Yeah. It's hard to make peace with the fact that we can't explain it. Like, it's just. It's just weird and bad. You would think, though, after being in jail, surrounded by people who don't like the cops, you know, mostly, generally, that when one of them tells you, hey, you're talking to an undercover cop right now, you'd maybe think twice about that one. No. Especially since it just happened to you.
Yeah.
You know?
What do you think should happen to you?
Nothing. I don't think anything. It's not my fault I'm in here. It's their fault. Oh, Okay. That's right. An interesting also, take.
Yeah, the law and, you know, okay, whatever.
Right. So, yeah, clearly something very wrong with that man.
Yeah, back in the cage.
Yeah, kinda.
Kind of, right?
Yeah. Well, he's gone now, so.
Yeah, I feel less bad about it just because of how horrible he is.
Yeah, I get it. But yeah, I mean, I don't really think I have anything else to say about that. Do you?
No.
Great. Okay. Well, let's move on to something a little bit lighter. We can have a bit of a palate cleanser. What's your good thing? Let's make it about us.
Yeah. Okay. So my good thing is that tomorrow we are getting dinner with our friends, and they're... may potentially be a hot tub involved in the night.
I'm so excited.
In the winter, in the state of Michigan. Let's fucking go. That's like what I have to say.
My most ideal night ever. It's like I'm going to hang out with my friends. We're going to have probably games, maybe a drink or two, and we're going to sit in a hot tub?
We're going to sit in a hot tub?
I mean, I cannot imagine a better night.
Come on, folks. You gotta live, and this is living.
This is living.
Quite frankly, this is living. What is your good thing?
I highly support that good thing. That is also a good thing for me. My other good thing is that when this episode comes out, I will have already been home for Thanksgiving time with my family. That we're recording before that. But when this comes out, I will have squeezed my parents' dogs so much. I love them. I can't wait to squeeze them and just hold their little heads and touch their little feet and pet their little faces and their heads. I just can't wait. I love them all so much, and I haven't seen them in a couple months, and I've been missing them. When you don't have them with you all the time, you miss them a lot. And I just, they're so little, and I just want to squeeze them lightly, of course, lovingly, but
lovingly,
squeeze
them
nonetheless.
Not in a physically harming way,
yeah,
but in a way that soothes yourself, you know, to the core.
Yeah,
you just feel like you need to do it.
It's like the cuteness aggression. You just want to squeeze them, but you love them so much.
You'll take it and like very, very aggressively but gently pulsate on the head.
That's weird. Right? Don't say that. That sounds weird.
I'm stealing that from an Eliza bit.
Okay, you're a comedian.
That is kind of what. This is kind of what you do, right?
It kind of, but it sounded very weird. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. If you would like to get a bunch of bonus episodes and vote on stories you want to hear, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. We post pictures of all the stories we talk about over on Instagram at nottoday_podcast. You can also find a link to our merch shop in our Instagram bio. If you or anyone you know has a story of survival or something crazy that's happened to you and you'd like to send it to us and possibly hear it on an upcoming listeners episode, send it to notodaypodcast@gmail.com. We have a TikTok that is not today podcast and a Twitter that is not a podcast, but the TikTok podcast is a 3.
Because that makes sense.
And just keep breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.